It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. During this time of world pandemic, every day we learn new stories of death, hardship, and heartbreak. Tens of thousands of Americans have already lost their lives. Others are dealing with the incredible challenges of recovering from COVID-19. Millions of Americans have lost their jobs, and many small businesses are teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. For some, a time like this can lead to a deepening of faith. For others, faith can be shaken. This hour, we're turning to some of Iowa's religious leaders to talk about how they're feeling, how they're reaching out to their faith communities, and what lessons from the past can teach us during this time. I'll also talk this hour with religious scholar Robert Cargill, Rabbi David Kaufman of Des Moines will be here, Imam Taha Tawil of Cedar Rapids, and Cedric McIntosh, a hospital chaplain in Waterloo. And we want to hear from you. How has faith been a part of your life during this time? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My first guest today is Pastor Val Swinton of Clarksville Church of Christ. He is also the former mayor of Clarksville, a beloved member of the community, and a COVID-19 survivor. Pastor Swinton, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
First, tell me how you're feeling now. How are you doing?
I'm very weak. I got home, a week ago today. So this is my first week home, and I've still, even little things like walking to the bathroom leaves me pretty exhausted. So I'm still recovering. They say it'll be a long recovery, but the medical people are optimistic that I will recover.
Well, I'm so glad you're home. I'm so glad you're improving. And I'm really grateful to you for talking to us today. But I also want you to know that if this conversation feels too long to you, let me know and we can say goodbye.
Okay. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your experience with COVID-19. You ended up spending 21 days in the hospital, but what do you remember from before that time?
Well, I remember getting very sick on about the 24th of March. And I went to my family doctor in Waverly, and he sent me to a walk-in clinic that was supposed to do testing for COVID-19. The staff there determined I didn't have the standard characteristics that would qualify me to be tested, so they sent me home. I continued to get sicker and sicker, and finally, about 2 days later, as I was walking through my kitchen, I passed out. So my wife called the ambulance, and they sent me to the Waverly Hospital. The Waverly Hospital did test me for COVID-19, and I tested positive. So they transferred me to a hospital in Waterloo where I was treated. Within a day or two, I was in the intensive care unit on a ventilator, but my body did not respond. And so I got worse and worse. And on that Sunday morning, a doctor called my wife and said he'll be gone by the end of the day, that his condition is worsening so bad, we don't think we can save him. And so and a nurse from the unit called my son and basically told him the same thing. So my wife and my son were sitting home waiting for that dreaded phone call. It never came. After 4 or 5 days, my condition began to improve, and eventually I was taken off the ventilator and taken out of ICU and transferred to a regular room.
Wow.
So, but for that one weekend, they were pretty confident I wasn't going to make it.
During your time in the hospital, most of the time you were in a medically induced coma to give your body time to fight this infection while the ventilator did the breathing for you. For a lot of people, I think that, you know, the idea that you got to get off the ventilator, that sounds like the happy ending of the story, and it is. But that's a really difficult recovery. Can you describe what it felt like as you came back to yourself and started breathing for yourself?
Well, interestingly, I have no memory of any of this. The last memory I have is the Waterloo ambulance crew strapping me to a gurney and putting me on the ambulance to take me to Waterloo. For some reason, after that, my memory just goes blank until I woke up in a regular hospital room. I know, 10 or 12 days later. And why that is, I don't know, but I can't tell you what they said. I can't tell you what it felt like to have a ventilator installed. I really have absolutely no memory of any of this.
Wow. It took a while for you to start to have control of your body again, to be able to move on your own. Do you feel like that kind of motor control has returned to you?
It has. They warned me that my recovery, and they expect me, to make a full recovery. They're confident that I will recover, but it's going to take a while. And they said you're going to have some setbacks. And yesterday I had my first one. My blood pressure went down to 70 over 52. And so they warned me to kind of scale back on the rehab that I'm doing because I run a real risk of fainting. And so they said that's how this recovery is going to be, two steps forward and one step backwards. So I'm dealing with that. I do have control of everything. I mean, I can walk, I can stand up, I can sit down. I'm doing exercises with an elastic band and like deep knee bends and things like that. And in fact, when we're done here, if I got the energy, we're going to go for a walk. It's too nice a day to be inside. But it's very slow.
While you were recovering in the hospital, as you began to be aware of your surroundings and understand what you had been through, how did the fact that you are a pastor, how did your deep faith help you during that time?
Well, I put my trust in God. As a Christian, I know that when I do die, I'll be with Jesus, and that's a great comfort. So I never really thought about dying. I just thought about recovering the best I could and just seeing what happened. I was never angry with God. I never questioned him as to why this happened. In fact, I have this strong feeling that he's going to use this to make me a better minister.
Your son has shared that he told you that literally thousands of people were praying for you. And of course, the entire community of Clarksville loves you and was pulling for you. But your story was shared far and wide. People all over Iowa and probably beyond were thinking of you and praying for your recovery. How did that feel?
Excellent. To have that kind of support, I can't even begin to describe it. It was just wonderful. I mean, to have all these people, and, you know, 99% of them I didn't even know. They were praying for me from around the world. But and I'm convinced that that's why I survived. I believe their prayers saved me. I think that I came so close to death that that's the only explanation I have. And I can't tell you how many of the medical staff at the hospital came up to me and said, this has to be a miracle. They said, you should be gone by now. So I'm convinced that it's prayer that brought about that that miracle.
You are long from returning back to work. You have a long road of recovery before you. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, not a lot of energy yet. You did take a little time to speak to your parishioners. You did a Facebook sermon that was short. What did you want to tell the people in your congregation?
I want to tell them, how do I put this, that Jesus is faithful and that he won't let us down. And although we live in very confusing times right now, to don't give up on him, stay faithful to him, and he'll get us through this.
So many people who are dealing with this disease do not have the kind of support network that you have. They may not be well-known people in their community. And one of the really heartbreaking things about this disease is because it is so easy to transmit, many, many people mm-hmm. are alone as they go through this, and they're alone at the hospital. What do you want to say to those people? It's just such a heartbreaking part of this.
Well, it is heartbreaking. And I want to remind them that God still loves them and that they shouldn't give up, that he has a plan for their life if they want to turn to Christ, and that that they should keep pushing forward. And I can't begin to tell you how much the support that I got meant to me. And so I feel for those people who aren't fortunate enough to have that. I'm not sure how far I could have gotten without the love that that you know has been shown to me. So I just tell them to cling to Jesus and let him help them.
When you were diagnosed with COVID-19, of course you had been in close contact with many other people, including your wife. And I'm curious about her health and the health of others in your family.
Well, as far as I know, everybody else in my family is okay, except my wife. We believe she also came down with it. She was never officially diagnosed. Nobody ever did a test on it. But she showed the symptoms that I had. She just wasn't as sick as I was. But we believe that she had it also. And she has recovered, by the way. She's doing much better.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Well, Pastor Val Swinton, thank you so much for talking with us. I hope you do get outside into the sunshine for a little bit of a walk
well,
today.
You.
And I hope you continue.
I think the sun would do a lot of good.
So. Absolutely, for a lot of people. I hope you continue to feel better.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Pastor Val Swinton of Clarksville Church of Christ. He's also the former mayor of Clarksville, a beloved member of the community, and a COVID-19 survivor. We've been talking to him about his experiences. As the hour goes on, we're going to hear from religious leaders around the state of Iowa. We'll talk to them about how their faith is bringing them comfort right now, how they're reaching out to their congregations, even though physical houses of worship are closed. We'll also have a religious scholar joining the conversation to talk about lessons we can take from history as well. And we want to hear from you. Tell us about your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about faith in a time of world pandemic. We'll be talking to religious leaders in Iowa throughout the hour. We also want to hear from you. Tell us about your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my next guest is Robert Cargill. He is an Associate Professor of Classics and Religious Studies at the University of Iowa. Bob, hello.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. And of course, I want to mention you, like so many others, are working from home right now. You are at home alone with four children. So we'll just put that out in the open as we enter into our conversation this hour and give you all the grace and space that you need if that arises. But thank you again for being here.
Happy to be here.
And Bob, you are teaching during this time. You're interacting with your students who I'm sure have spread all over the state of Iowa, all over the country, and perhaps even all over the world. What kinds of things are you talking with your students about right now?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed is that they're scared. And I don't mean that in a negative way. But, you know, most of the students nowadays, and this came as a shock to me as well, is they've never experienced a national tragedy, right? Most of them either weren't born or were very, very young when 9/11 took place. And, you know, every time I'm reminded of this, I'm reminded of how old I am. I still consider myself young, but then I'm reminded of how old I am. They were very young or weren't born when 9/11 took place. And so for many of them, this is their first national tragedy. And so one of the things that I reminded them before spring break, when I was telling them, you know, this might be the last time we see each other, is that it's not your fault. And some of my colleagues said, why do you keep telling them that? It's good to remind them they didn't do anything wrong. Millennials are often blamed for all kinds of things. And so I wanted to make sure to remind them, this isn't your fault. You guys did nothing wrong. And we, the faculty at the University of Iowa, are going to make every effort we can to make this transition to online teaching as easy as it is for you, because they're, quite frankly, they're scared. They're confused. They've never experienced anything like this. And so I also remind them we're all in this together. And so we who've been through the national tragedies, who have pulled together as a nation, we're in this with you. And these students can teach us some things. They grew up with social media. You know, they used to be criticized for social distancing, you know, sitting in their own rooms and being on social media. They actually know how to do this quite well. And so they've been teaching us how to do this quite effectively.
Well, and the message that you're sharing with your children, I think, is something that it's important for all of us to hear. This is a time with so much emotion as we try to process the news, we try to process the heartbreak, we try to process policy decisions and changes that we may or may not agree with. I find myself personally, I try to maintain a equilibrium, but sometimes I get swept away by anger or by my grief. And that's a powerful message that you're sharing with your students that I think we all need to hear. These emotions are something that I find surprising, even though rationally, of course, I'm upset. Is that something you think we should be thinking about?
Yeah, there's this rational part of your brain, and then there's this emotional part. And I don't think it's just the students that are wrestling with this. I think it's every adult at all age levels. We know the facts, we know the science, but then there's this emotional part, especially in moments of isolation, where we just become overwhelmed with, is this going to be the way it is going forward? And it's, you know, there's these TV shows where people go off on an island and they try to survive as long as they can. And when you watch these, you know, the people used to tune in and watch these shows, it's always the psychological part that gets to people and makes them crack. And this is why community, whether it's a community of faith or whether it's the Iowa community or whether a social community, that's why this is important. And that's why when this is missing in these social distancing, these shelter in place times, that's what makes this so difficult and why we need to work hard to find alternatives, to listen to the radio, to try to find ways to talk to each other, to on the phone, to keep with this community, right? That's what's important, to try to replace that traditional in-person community with some kind of community to help defend against that isolation.
Well, Bob, stay with us. We're going to bring some more people into this conversation. And of course, we also want to hear from you this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us now, Imam Taha Tawil of the Mother Mosque of America in Cedar Rapids. Imam, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
You are in a particularly, I guess, a unique circumstance. Although Christians have celebrated Easter during this time, and Jewish people have celebrated Passover during this time of social distancing and quarantine, Ramadan begins on Friday, and that's such an important part of the year for Muslims. Tell me how you're preparing for the holy month of Ramadan, knowing that you cannot be together.
What a hard situation. The Muslim community really faces its unique challenges in terms of how we practice our religion, which is a key aspect of our lifestyle. But what will happen is that our Islamic law comes from our divine book we called Al-Quran and the practice of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. From there, we get our rules and regulation, and we are told to follow the instructions of our local government and authority when a health crisis happened like that. So we are told religiously to follow the direction and the guidelines that the healthcare professionals and authorities like CDC and the like, when situation like this arises. So it is also, you know, a very helpful thing to know that we are human, and that what is this crisis, this pandemic is teaching us, that we are human, and this humanity now, all of it, is under a crisis. And therefore, we want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So therefore, what a sad situation. Ramadan is the month of the blessings and mercy. And we learn how to get together and start a new page to earn a new rewards and additional rewards. But with this pandemic and the crisis, we are telling every Muslim to stay home and to celebrate Ramadan at home and to be in congregational situation unless the healthcare authority told us to do so or open it up. Our grand, like we have like the three holiest mosques in the world, and we start with Mecca, our holiest place there with the Kaaba, the house of God that Abraham and his son Ishmael built. It is closed. The mosque of the Prophet in Medina, it is the closed. Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem is also closed. So these are the three big, you know, Islamic mosques, and we follow through because, as I said, we are for humanity, and we don't want to be part of the problem, but part of the solution.
Well, it sounds like the decision to close your mosque was made easier by the teachings of your religion, although I can imagine that it was still heartbreaking for you and for your congregation. How are you trying to connect with those who worship at your mosque, even though it's closed?
Well, in America here, we are sort of organized a little bit, not like other areas. We got so many umbrella organizations. We have the Assembly of Muslim Jurists of America. We have something called FICA, Council of North America, and that is like scholars and understandable people, reputable imams and the scholars, plus the Islamic Society of North America, we called ISNA. They all are encouraging us to go virtual. So we have the YouTube, we have the what we call the Zoom, let us go for a meeting. All these, you know, application, we are using it to reach out our members in the community. And I want to say, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, we have three Islamic centers or three mosques. The big one is called the Islamic Center of Cedar Rapids, and we have a very active imam there, Imam Hassan Salim, and he is almost every day, if not every week, recording a message and putting a YouTube or a lecture. The same thing at the Mother Mosque here. We are reaching our community members through this virtual technology. And the other organization is called MASS, Muslim American Society. They are closed, and they also reach their members through the media, social media, and WhatsApp or YouTube or other things like that. So that's the only way, charity, you know, to communicate nowadays.
Yeah. Are you worried about the people in your community who may not have an internet connection at home or Wi-Fi at home who can't connect in that way. That's something that, of course, we're very worried about with education. But you have people of all ages who may have that problem, the elderly as well as the young.
You are right. The mother mask especially are looking for the elders and for the old community members. And that is the phone calls. So I have a list of families. I have people in nursing homes that I go personally, in a way, visit and talk. But generally, you are right. You know, it is only through media or phones that we are reaching out to each other. And the praying, you know, this is a time for reflection. We tell them this is a time of a crisis. So just keep praying and maybe we come back and God, you know, bring a solution to this crisis. And so that is basically our message to them and to the others.
There have been times in history, and we can see it happening around the world in some places right now, and Bob Cargill is going to share some of his thoughts about this as well, but where people's faith has caused them to be divided from people of other faiths. And right now we see violence against Muslims in India, and in some cases, Muslim groups in India being accused of spreading COVID-19. I mean, this disease can further divide us. What would you say to people right now in this moment to try to keep us from allowing those divisions to hurt us?
Well, Charity, this is politics. Politics is a big disease that divides us all. And the rules of the Islamic faith is very obvious, is very plain. And that is, in case there is a pandemic happen, you must restrain yourself and keep yourself at home. If you are in a town, you are not allowed to get out of that town or to let anyone inside that town if there is a pandemic in it. So the situation in India is different because in India, it's more about politics and more dividing. There are many about citizenship. They strip the Muslims from that. So it used to be a leader in interreligious faith and good country, India, but now I think politics, damaging. And that is not good, especially in this era, in this time. We should stand together as a humanity to save ourselves. It's not about dividing or it's not about fighting. It is about unity as a human, because this invisible germ or virus is causing all this death and chaos in our world. And why don't we unite to beat up the problem and defeat it through the science and health and all of that? So I feel it is more politics than religion.
Well, Imam Taha Tawil, thank you so much for talking with me today, and I hope that you have a blessed Ramadan. I know that this is going to be an experience that you never forget, unlike any other.
May I just add one thing about Ramadan, very quickly. Ramadan is a month of fasting that Muslims observe through self-examination, and they pray during night, day, and there is a special also prayer. It used to be individually, and then it became congregational. And Islam is not a new religion. It's the same message of Abrahamic. So we are here to revive the Abrahamic message, who fasted and who prayed and who did the best. And therefore, we send a message of peace and understanding to every human, to let them know that we are with them and doing prayers for them.
Thank you so much, Imam Tahat Tawil of the Mother Mosque of America in Cedar Rapids. We'll hear from more faith leaders in a moment. Robert Cargill, still with us, Associate Professor of Classics and Religious Studies at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about faith in a time of world pandemic. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with Rabbi David Kaufman of Des Moines and Cedric McIntosh, chaplain at Allen Hospital in Waterloo. With me now, Robert Cargill, Associate Professor of Classics and Religious Studies at the University of Iowa. And I want to get to the phones as well. Raul is on the line in Des Moines. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there. What would you like to share?
Hi. Okay. So I'm a member of Plymouth Congregational Church. And these times have been pretty tough at home. And I'm also, I'm just really glad that I've been able to view the services online, and it's just really comforting. I'm usually a singer at the choir, and so it's kind of tough not being able to to do that. But so I really appreciate being able to do that, and also I've been finding myself looking or watching the service from my home church in Muscatine, which is also refreshing because I usually don't participate, but now through Facebook video or Facebook Live, I'm able to join that. So now I'm doing two services in one Sunday.
Oh, well, I'm glad that's bringing you so much comfort. Thank you for sharing that with us. I know a lot of people are joining their congregations through technology, and that has brought a lot of people comfort during this time. Not the same as being together physically, but still a powerful experience. You can share your thoughts at 866-780-9100. And Bob, before we bring Rabbi Kaufman into the conversation, as I brought up earlier, sometimes crises like this one can divide people based on their faith. There can be accusations, there can be division. What are your thoughts about that as we see that happening in some places around the world?
Well, this is the history of humankind. And I think Imam Tawil made a very important point. I'm presently teaching a course at the University of Iowa, which interestingly is now online. I'm teaching it online now, called Global Religious Conflict. And one of the things that we talk about is in moments of global distress, like a plague or something like we're experiencing now, groups of people tend to go tribal, right? They get afraid and they become, let's use the word, very selfish. They protect what's theirs and they become tribal. And one of those tribal divisions happens to be religion, despite the fact that the religious teachings of many of these faith traditions is the exact opposite. It's to not harm foreigners. It's to not harm people of these different faith traditions. And this is what we're experiencing now, is that when people become afraid, they tend to, you see nationalism or you see racial tensions, and you see these religious divisions being used as an excuse to divide people, when it's now more than ever that people of faith ought to be reaching out. Religion shouldn't be used to divide people. People of faith, and I think Imam Tawil exemplified this, they should be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And people of faith should be saying, this is when we should use religion as a comforting device, not as something to cast blame. And if we could do more of that, the faith communities could be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
I want to bring Rabbi David Kaufman of Temple B'nai Jeshurun in Des Moines into the conversation now. Rabbi Kaufman, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And of course, we were talking about celebrating Ramadan without having the mosques open. You have just been through Passover, which must have been a strange experience to not be together with the people.
Yeah, and Passover, our community Passover for me is one of my favorite annual events. We have a large crowd that gets together and we sing songs and we have a great time together as we do our Passover Seder. This year was very strange. We recorded a Passover Seder with our songs and what we normally do, and then posted it so that people could do their own Seders at different times along with us, which people did. I think we had probably even more people watching that than we would normally have attending our Seder. One of the things that was really unique this year is because everybody was at home and doing their own thing, I think there were probably more Passover Seders done this year than at any point in history. Because people were not able to gather in really large numbers anywhere. Everybody had to do their own thing. So there are some unique things that have been happening because of the circumstance as well.
Well, and you are also doing live streamed services on Zoom and on Facebook. You've even done some YouTube live, so you're experimenting with a bunch of different kinds of technology.
Yeah, so when we first did Zoom, I had a podcast for a few years, an internet television show for a few years too. So I'm kind of used to doing a little bit of the online stuff, but I'm not used to producing while I'm leading. So that's kind of an interesting scenario. But we've been doing services, classes, and other community programs. We just had a program for Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, last night for the Jewish community. It's been good as far as giving people the opportunity to access things. I know I've got a lot of people who are now studying and attending online services who haven't for a long time, haven't attended any kind of classes or services. There are a lot of opportunities online that people really haven't taken advantage of that they now can. But there's quite a bit of a learning curve for local congregations to do this.
I'm sure. And of course, there are members of your congregation who are probably not online, not connected in that way. How do you reach out to them?
So we have people in our congregation writing notes to people at home, reaching out by phone to people, especially to our more vulnerable populations that may not have, be able to join us online. We have been helping people get online who really have never done that before or get into, Zoom programs. It's one of the things that have been commented on is the learning curve of people who are viewing programs and getting them to understand when they have to mute their microphones and when they should not be broadcasting video and all kinds of other stuff as they're live in a Zoom meeting. There's a whole lot of fun stories about things that are going on in Zoom meetings that by people who just aren't experienced with what they're dealing with. But we have been really trying to do as much outreach as we can because one of the biggest problems people are having really is isolation and a lot of depression and anxiety going along with this. And connection to community is really one of the major reasons that people belong to any religious institution, a physical religious institution. So maintaining that as much as possible while we're going through this process is really a very important thing. Letting people know that we care about them, and then kind of giving people some hope that things are going to get better, and that once we get through this tunnel, basically, there's light on the other side, and things could even be better for them.
In just 1 minute, I'm going to ask you a big question, but then we need to move on. This is also such a dark and difficult time. It's easy to feel as if God has deserted us during this time. For members of your congregation who might be feeling that way or even questioning their faith because of this terrible pandemic, what would you say to them?
Well, I would say Jewish history teaches us a lot of lessons, and one of the main lessons it teaches us is that there have been a lot of dark times before. We have been able to get through times that are much more difficult for Jewish people as far as the threat to life and limb. This time we're in a much better place. And we know that things are going to get better. We have confidence that the technology is going to be there. It's a matter of just dealing with the difficulty for a short period of time, and we'll get through. And some of the times in the past have been ones where we weren't sure we were going to get through. So we needed miraculous things to happen to get us through. We are in a much more hopeful place today, as long as we do what we need to do, and we help each other last through it. We'll get through this wilderness, and we'll get to the promised land. That's what our tradition teaches.
Rabbi David Kaufman, thank you so much for talking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Rabbi David Kaufman of Temple B'nai Jeshurun in Des Moines. And I want to turn now to Cedric McIntosh. He's a chaplain at Allen Hospital in Waterloo. Cedric, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And Cedric, you work with people of all faiths in your work at the hospital. That must be a unique position as you interact with people during difficult times in their lives, whether it's COVID-19 or other difficult times. What do you feel your role is?
Well, again, my role here as a chaplain is to help people to find that connection, which I would call spirituality or divine spark. That is where they feel comfortable, that person feels comfortable that their higher power or some greater being is connecting them with hope. You know, and when a person has spirituality, I believe that spirituality gives your life meaning and purpose above two things. And I say this all the time. And those two things are suffering and death itself. So as a nation, we are going through a lot of suffering, whether it be emotional suffering, moral injuries by virtue of the complicated grief that comes with family members at the end of life and families not being able to be present with them at the end of life. So we help individuals find that divine spark within themselves. It's nothing that we are going to give them. It's something that they have already. And that's what our goal is to help people connect up with that thing that gives their life hope, gives it meaning and purpose above suffering and even death itself. And when a person has that, then we see them come out of things like COVID-19. Why? Because if you think that you are probably going to die, the likelihood is it's going to happen because your mind is already in that area. But if you have that divine spark or that hope that there is a day that we are going to be done with this idea of COVID, there's a ray of hope looking forward. And you're saying to yourself, we're one day closer to the end of this pandemic, then there's something to look forward to. There's hope for the family. There's hope for the patient. And really, there is a redirection of our care from caring from the patient only and to caring for the community. and that the hospitals now have to be more concerned about who comes in and who leaves and what they leave with.
So many hospitals everywhere have limited the number of visitors or done away with visitors altogether. So no matter whether somebody's in the hospital with COVID-19 or something else, a lot of people are alone, and that isolation can be so difficult. What can you offer to a patient who feels forgotten or abandoned?
Well, one of the things is we offer the compassionate presence for the end of life, with family members not being able to be there. We, as chaplains, in many cases, can connect them still with their spiritual care providers through Zoom and sometimes FaceTime and Skype and other different methods of communicating where the patient can have that connection with family. But if it's a situation where that person feels like they are alone and they need someone to be with them, we're here to kind of fill in. We're not to replace the imams, the rabbis, and the pastors, but we're here to be an extension of their ministry so that they can call us and ask us to represent them in a way, whether it be by Zoom, getting it to the patient, or whether it be by doing some of the sacraments that is acceptable by our denomination that is similar to their faith communities. Some of the things that are similar is grief, you know, and we are dealing with a lot of grief because people have been cut off from that end-of-life care with family members. So that complicates grief, and that's going to be an issue in the upcoming months,
yeah,
with not being able to be there at the end of life and not being able to have a proper memorial service.
Well, Cedric McIntosh, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your thoughts today. And please stay safe in the work that you do.
All right.
Cedric McIntosh, chaplain at Allen Hospital in Waterloo. Also, thank you to Bob Cargill of the University of Iowa. We've been talking about faith in a time of world pandemic this hour on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.